Okay, we're now on to paper six. Take away.
All right, thank you. So we'll talk about agenda paper six, everyone's favorite topic after 11. So as you will recall at the meeting in May, we discussed an issue. We had received a submission where the submitter requested to clarify whether previously held interest in the assets and liabilities of a joint operation should be remeasured when the investor obtains an additional interest that results in them obtaining joint control in the joint operation. At the meeting, the committee observed that there are other transactions as well involving previously held interest where there could be a lack of guidance or a diversity of views in accounting for the previously held interest. So we've gone back and done an analysis of the different types of transactions involving businesses. The analysis is presented in Appendix A of the staff paper on page 14. And we've listed all the transactions in there, and we've highlighted the transactions which, in our view, there is a lack of guidance or a diversity of views in practice. We went and conducted outreach on most of those transactions as well, again, to determine how widespread they are. So the results of the outreach are in paragraphs 9 to 28 of our staff paper. We further analyzed those transactions in paragraph 29 to 23. And based on all our analysis, research, and the outreach, we are recommending that the committee include the following transactions within its scope, which is where an entity obtains control, either from previously being a joint controller in a joint operation or from just being a party to a joint operation. And the next transaction is the flip of that, where an entity loses control and they end up being either a joint controller in a joint operation or just being a party to a joint operation. And the other transaction is the original submission, which was the change of interest, which resulted in the party to a joint operation obtaining joint control. For the other transactions, within those 14 that we identified, we think based on our outreach, the transactions are either not widespread, they're not leading to diversity in practice, or in the case of most transactions involving movements into equity accounting, they're subject to the board project on equity accounting. So we do not recommend the committee include those within its analysis. If the committee agrees, then we will take these transactions back, perform further analysis, and present the analysis to you at a future meeting. We have two questions for you on page 13, is whether you agree with our analysis and the recommended scope for the project. And secondly, do you believe there are any other transactions that we should include within the scope of this project as well?
So we're just talking about scoping today.
Correct.
Kansu?
What I observed was that many transactions were not included in the scope just because of the equity method project. Transaction 1, 2, 3, 5, 9, 5 transactions.
Correct.
So I just wanna ask you one question, maybe two questions. The first one, when that project is going to be completed? The second one, if they do it, then will they include these transactions in their scope of the project?
So that is a limited scope project on equity accounting, and the board members can step in and correct me on timing, but I do not believe the timing had been finalized for that project, so I do not have a good sense on the timing of that project, but they have discussed the scope of the project, and one of the things within the scope is changes of ownership interest for transactions involving equity accounting. So that would capture, in my opinion at the moment, I believe that would capture anything that's moving in and out of equity accounting. So that would include those transactions that we've listed in paragraph 29, I believe.
Yeah, so what I'm just suggesting is that, before we decide the scope, we have to check with the research team whether they will include all these transactions.
Correct.
That we scoped out.
Correct. And we will ensure that the project progresses that they do, and to the extent they don't, I think we can bring some of those transactions back to the committee if necessary at a future date.
Yeah. Lee?
First up to the staff, how long will this policy be in came out with the first interpretation review of both IFRS 3 and IFRS 15. Because we are going to do some activity on IFRS 3 post-implementation review, NIS 27, and we are going to undertake in some time a PIR of IFRS 11. And given the time frame for this, which is, I think, not an interpretation, but a standard setting activity that you have in mind, how would that play together?
Yeah, the the post-implementation review of IFRS 11 hasn't been, its timing hasn't been discussed by the board at this stage, but on the basis of the normal pattern, I would expect that to commence end of this year, beginning of next, so certainly Q1 2016. So there would be a degree of sort of this piece of work would sort of proceed, but also run in parallel to some extent the first phase of that PIR. That PIR, though, I wouldn't expect to sort of complete in terms of its reporting back until probably the first half of 2017.
This is maybe my concern, although I don't have very strong views, but to start tinkering with IFRS 11 in parallel with the PIR or just before might be a little bit of a problem for those who want a stable platform, and also might have some unintended consequences by taking some directions or some without really having assessed all the whole picture of IFRS 11. So I would put a word of caution on really being careful not to meddle too much with the two things.
Point taken. Okay, I've got Andrew, Reinhardt, Bob, Carl, and Mark.
I appreciate the staff going through this exercise. I think I was one of the ones who asked to take a slightly broader look at change of status type transactions and remeasurement. I guess what I was hoping for, maybe naively, is looking at some of the existing guidance and the areas perhaps where we lack guidance, we might be able to extract some general principles as to when we remeasure, and then apply those more broadly so we don't have to kind of slice and dice the scope in the way that's now proposed. But perhaps that was naive, and I'm broadly content to having gone through the evidence gathering to head off in this general direction. On the specifics, I think on the first two items of proposed scope, so going from control, obtaining control of a joint operation from being a party, I think that's only an issue, the way I read the standards, if we are dealing with situations where we're outside of a separate entity.
We would analyze both and see where. I think currently people are saying that because of the wording in IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, they believe it applies to entities,
yes,
and not to where you do not have a separate entity. But when we examine the transaction, we'll see how the guidance interplays for both of those scenarios.
Okay.
And whether there should or should not be a difference.
Okay. Well, I would read IFRS 3 to deal with the situation where the previous interest is held within an entity. I think similarly with loss of control, I think we're going from a control of subsidiary to an interest in a joint operation structured through a separate entity. I think that's dealt with. It's just when we're dealing outside an entity. On the third category, which is sort of going from party to a joint operation, presumably with rights to the assets and obligations to the liabilities to a joint operator, I'd read IFRS 11 to say that type of party to a joint operation accounts in the same way as a joint operator.
It accounts in the same way, but the question is, I guess, when you have that change in level of influence, do you have to remeasure the existing, like, let's say you own 10% interest in the assets and liabilities first, and now you have a 33% interest, do you remeasure that existing 10, or do you just account for the additional 23 when you obtain the joint control?
Well, if in accounting terms there is no dividing line,
correct,
between accounting as a joint operator and accounting as a party to a joint operation, I don't see why
this
a change of status within those two categories and a change of status that takes you across that line, whatever the answer is on remeasurement of the previous interest, or if you're going down on remeasuring the retained interest, I don't see why you should get a different outcome.
Correct.
Because I think the principle that the same accounting model applies is there in in IFRS 11. So I just think there might be an opportunity, without doing any more, if you accept that starting points, without doing any more work, to actually address a broader category
correct.
Of yep. transactions Absolutely. And not quite narrow it down to this extent.
Reinhardt?
My comments were very similar to the ones Andrew made, in particular the impact of holding the interest in a joint operation through an entity and the implications of IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, which we talked about. The other comment I had was we are proposing to scope out or only deal with situations where the interests are business. And, you know, I've certainly observed instances where the transactions are not businesses. They're a collection of assets and some diversity in practice as to whether you remeasure or not. So I was just interested in why we limited it to transactions involving businesses.
I think that was the direction we received from the committee at the last meeting to say when we were discussing on what we should look at within the scope, the discussion was whether we should look at businesses or whether we should look at just joint operations or something else. And the committee had concluded that we should just look at businesses. The original submission was based on a business, and we expanded the analysis to include businesses. Having said that, for the particular transaction that we've identified, if the committee members feel, based on their experience, that transactions involving non-businesses in these areas are significant as well, we could simultaneously analyze those fact patterns as well.
Yeah, I mean, our experience is that there's some diversity in practice for non-business transactions.
Right.
I'm not sure if others have experienced okay. the same, but that's ours.
Bob?
I agree with the scope as a starting point, but I don't think we can put blinders on and just ignore the other issues. Because, for example, if we come up with an answer for questions 13, 14, 7, and 12, and 6, we might create a principle that while there isn't diversity in questions 3 and 9, it could create diversity, and the next thing we'll know is we'll have those questions coming back. So I think we need to keep our eyes open, and as we address these five issues, don't disagree with starting with those, but we can't ignore those other questions. I had the same question as Reinhardt as to why we're dealing with just in the case where the entity is a business. I thought we should also address where it's not a business. And then Andrew said something that triggered a memory in this. When I looked at this, I thought this matrix was really helpful, and it helped me to identify a pattern here. And I'm not saying that this is the principle we need to discuss at our next meeting, but it just occurred to me that when I have a change in accounting method, it seems to be where I have a measurement. And where there isn't a change in accounting method, this seems to be say that there is no remeasurement. And I thought that was interesting.
Not sure which of those is the chicken and which is the egg, but take your point. Carl?
Yeah, pretty much in the same area. I really struggle to realize what is obtaining control of a joint operation. I don't think it's realistic in the practical life. I really don't think. It can explain why there is no accounting treatment for such a situation, because I don't think it's realistic.
Okay. Martin?
Yeah, pretty much the same thoughts as Bob. I believe if I would be a public relation manager, although, so from the work of the IRSB, I have to consider when I'm issuing something and when I then reject to do the hypercare. hypercare in terms of I'm issuing a kind of software and then I say, oh no, with regard to that interface, I'm not responsible for. So. And specifically, if we say to issues like 33B, from having joint control in a joint operation to bring a party to a joint operation,
yes.
For sure. I mean, we might not have had these issues before because IFRS 11 is more or less a new baby. Anyhow, we have at least to have a good reason other than probably currently we do not have so much application areas that we do reject to find a solution for it. What I believe could be fruitful is to consider whether we have a research project on equity accounting, probably how this impacts over overall scoping, what is with the post-implementation view of IFRS 3, and when we will have the post-implementation view of IFRS 11, because, I mean, from the first issuance onwards, I guess in the next year or so, we probably would start to consider when is the appropriate date to do that. And with that, we probably could also have, well, the change to find the right arguments and for supporting our scoping.
I thought I understood where you were taking us until about the last little bit of what you said there. First part, you seem to be saying, yeah, let's go ahead, let's get on with this. Then you kind of seem to go the other direction and say, well, but no. So which?
The question is, what kind of issues I would potentially resolve with the project on equity accounting? And then I would say I have to consider whether I should put this on hold and do not scope it in. Or
okay,
I might find another argument to say, okay, I have a kind of combined project. I go on with this issue. However, this would be the impulse then for the project on equity accounting. So I have to find the link between the two projects. Otherwise, one could raise the question how this all fits together.
We're setting a record, gang, for a discussion, the length of a discussion on scoping. Bonnie, Marie, Fei Long, Tony, Bruce. Bonnie?
I think I had similar comments to the others. I think specifically, maybe this is what Martin was kind of saying, for the transactions that have been identified, either they're part of the equity project and we kind of let that be whatever the timing is on that side. But then I think we need to cover all the other transactions. For instance, transaction 11 is being excluded because even though there's no specific guidance, there seems to be no diversity, or at least no significant diversity yet. But because IFRS 11 is so new, that doesn't make sense to scope it out. It seems like your entire population, either there is guidance, fine, it's part of the equity project, that'll be dealt with later, we look at everything else. And I guess my only concern then is the timing. I can't remember who mentioned that, you know, is there something in the equity project that would impact any decisions that we would make if we're going to make those sooner than what the equity project would come up with? And I guess it seems like these are relevant topics. We're getting a lot of questions. There's, you know, everyone's trying to apply the new gap and kind of go further. And as we look at new transactions, it seems like we want to provide timely guidance or timely help in having them apply that. So it seems like we should carry on with this project now, or else we'll be issuing something 4 years down the road and it's not so timely, it's not so helpful.
Marie?
Yeah, we also agree that I think these issues are linked, so it will be better just to deal with them all together. Even if there is no diversity, IFRS 11 raised a lot of questions, and we consider it might be helpful to do it in the post-implementation review, which is coming soon. So we consider it, we should wait for that. And maybe as the staff did on other topics, for example, the definition of business, the staff can start working on some elements just to help to prepare the post-implementation reviews on these elements.
Fei Long?
I agree with the staff, but I have a couple of comments. One is that why did the reasons to consider the first two scenarios in paragraphs 7A and B? And for paragraphs 30A and B, I don't think we could conclude anything different. For paragraph 33C, maybe we ought to address as part of the project. Given there are enough transactions.
Which paragraph was that for? 32B?
The first comment is what is the reasons to consider for the first two scenarios, paragraph 7A and B, and paragraph 30A and B.
Yeah.
And the second comment is paragraph 33C.
Right.
We ought to address it as part of the project, given there are sufficient transactions.
Yeah, so on all of those transactions that you just mentioned, we did know that those transactions are common. Like when we did our outreach, we identified that those transactions were common. In terms of the ones in 7A and B, which is obtaining control and losing control, all the respondents noted that there is diversity of views in there, and people are struggling to apply the guidance. On the transaction in 33C, all people commented that generally they would not remeasure the previously held interest, which is transaction number 11, and they would probably analogize to the guidance that's already there in other places when there's no change in accounting and there's no, when you retain joint control, for example. So they would analogize to all of those and not remeasure it. And because we did not observe any significant diversity in that area, we thought the committee should not take that onto its agenda. But the other two, there was significant diversity, and therefore we said that should be within the scope. It was just based on where we observed diversity and where we did not observe any diversity.
Tony and Bruce.
So I don't have any objection to beginning with where the staff has ended up. To me, the most important thing here is that, firstly, we don't end up biting off more than we can chew and trying to address a million different questions, which I think would be a bad thing. So I'm comfortable starting off with this. I think it's important to focus on the principles that we do have. And so I'd be disturbed at any answer that suggested obtaining control of a joint operation that sits in an entity is not a business combination. That would seem to be quite a troubling place to get to. But then, if starting with something that's narrow, I do agree with Bob that if we have got a principle that is going to apply to the things which there isn't currently guidance, we do need to think about what the consequences of applying that principle would be in other circumstances. But starting here, I think, is probably a good place to start.
Bruce, last call.
Thanks. I'll try to be brief. My comments, a lot of them have been echoed already. Firstly, I think we have to address this. I mean, I think where we've got situations, people have addressed, it comes down to Martin's PR issue earlier. We put the question out there, people have told us there's no guidance, these have a wide-ranging impact. For us to turn around and say, well, we're not going to address it, I think it's very difficult. My only caveat to that is I think we've got to be very, very concerned, like many of us, on the scope. I think we could end up taking this on as a 20-year project if we're not careful. And the last thing I was going to say is I think that we just need to be conscious that if we are taking it on, that we work very closely and ensure that the staff are getting feedback from the project guys on the equity accounting, on the PIR. I'd hate for us to be doing a whole lot of stuff that suddenly has already been done. We're retreading what's being done and we're all wasting our time.
I think my sense is that they're more likely to go to school on us than us going to school on them. But that's fine, and if it rolls around time to do the PIR, and all this does is to feed into that, well, that's not bad. That's not a bad outcome. My sense of the room is that there's general support, but it's a little bit like pushing on a balloon. If you push in on one side, something's likely to pop up on the other, and we just have to be cognizant of that. But I think that's the general sense that I had of the guidance. John, didn't want to forget you.
No, I mean, I support the general agreement. I think we have to start somewhere, and I agree with the recommended scope. I think we just need to keep in mind the other things that are going on around that and make sure it's not too disconnected.
Point taken. Okay, that's what we'll do.